The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Spooky books.
Scary books.
Actually, scary books scare us, so we had to read a short story because we couldn't handle the terror.
Yeah, also, it's not scary.
Also, yeah. Also, we thought it was a book originally when we chose it. If you didn't listen to the podcast last week, when we chose The Legend of Sleepy Hollow by Washington Irving to read for the podcast, because it's such an iconic piece of literature that's had all these adaptations made of it, we just assumed it was a book. And it's totally not even close to a book.
Turns out that is incorrect.
It takes, what, 30 minutes to read?
Yeah.
Ish.
That's probably about right. I actually thought I had a lot more of it to go than I did, and then it turned out I was at the end. Because the website I was reading it on has, like, 49 pages of legal disclaimers at the end of all their little e-books. I was like, I'm only halfway down this scroll bar. This seems like it should be getting close to the... Oh, okay.
All right. I hit the end of it and had to make sure that it wasn't, like, page one of X.
Yeah.
Because I was afraid that I'd show up and be like, okay, I read this short story. And you'd be like, what about all the stuff that happened after? And then I'd be like, oh, crap. I didn't read any of that. So this is our Halloween episode. If you remember, we read Frankenstein last year. And we decided to try and deliberately pick another spooky thing to read, not realizing that it wasn't that long. So this episode is going to be a little truncated from normal. Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah, our bad.
We'll do better next year, if there is a next year.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yeah, the recording of this just ended me stabbing Ben.
Unfortunately, that's probably true.
But since we read it, let's go ahead and talk about it. So, what would we consider the genre of this story?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, me either.
It's listed in our outline as a horror story question mark. Our outline, which just shut down.
It was like, fuck this. A horror story? Or is it a story poking fun at horror stories? We couldn't really tell. It is a horror story in the... in the fact that, you know, there's supposedly a headless horseman roaming around, and he's like a specter of a dead German soldier, Hessian soldier. But then it's strongly implied by the author that the ghost appearance actually was just a dude pulling a prank.
Yeah. And that whole story, whether prank or not, was probably also just bullshit.
BS in general. Well, the party they go to where everyone's talking about ghost stories sounded very much just like everyone BSing, like, here was my experience with the Headless Horseman.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Kind of thing, so. So, yeah, we're not entirely sure on the genre, but we're pretty sure that it's more poking fun than actually supposed to be a scary story.
Yeah, I'm reasonably certain of that.
Their narrator seemed a little tongue-in-cheek a couple times, so I couldn't really believe this story was completely serious.
Yeah, it was a bit tongue-in-cheek. I mean, the opening paragraph is talking about, oh, there's this region and there's this place called Terrytown because all the men used to hang out there and not work during the week.
Yeah, they hang out at the pub instead of coming home from the market.
It's like, okay, so we're not taking this seriously to begin with.
Also,
plus, the guy's name was Diedrich Knickerbocker. I mean, come on.
It's a sweet name.
It is a sweet name. But it's not a serious name. Yeah, it's not a name that screams gravity. Gravitas.
Hey, the ancestors of Diedrich Knickerbocker are going to be a little upset with you.
Yeah, well, if they're one of our 60 followers, they can come hunt me down.
So, Washington Irving is following in the proud tradition. Excuse me. Oh, other people who were writing around the same time as him, where instead of actually just saying, here's the short story that I wrote, he's like, here's this manuscript or notes that I found that some other person wrote about this story. Which we discussed when we read Frankenstein and The Scarlet Letter.
Yeah, and Hawthorne felt the need to write a prologue that was, like, five times the length of this short story just to explain where the manuscript came from. Right.
In this case, it just says, from the notes of Diedrich Knickerbocker, and then he goes on to the story, so we are spared that, at least.
Yeah.
But that was a very common device, and I'm not really sure why. Don't think we figured it out yet, but...
Yeah, I mean, it works well if it's something like Dracula. I mean, my issues with that book aside, but that style of storytelling works for that story because you kind of go, oh, here are these primary documents from this weird incident.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you go, oh, here's a manuscript someone else wrote about a story they heard at a party that they think probably wasn't true.
And I decided to publish it.
Yeah, that's right. And here it is. By Washington Irving. Or possibly Irving Washington.
I think in a lot of those cases, it's, like, at least in the case of this story, said the historian who was writing about it said everything was happening 30 years before, and so the story is taking place probably in the late 1700s. And
right.
So maybe authors felt compelled to be like, well, because the story takes place at this time, and it's from a first-hand account, I couldn't have written it, because I wasn't there, or I wasn't around.
Right.
Maybe. Trying to give the audience more of an illusion of truth or something.
Right.
Sort of thing. So.
Next up would be the plot synopsis, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Which... didn't really have a great one this week, to be honest, but a goofy-looking school teacher gets pwned by simple prank.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Iggy Pop Crane kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But he looks real weird, guys.
That's
it's
right.
Very important. Apparently he has, like, no forehead and his giant eyes and giant nose.
And a big, long, hooky nose, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's really scrawny.
He looks like a scarecrow.
Yeah. Actually, maybe the Disney representation of him is actually decent.
I was just thinking, if the animated version I'm remembering from Sleepy Hollow is correct, then it is a pretty good likeness. But I don't know if that's a real representation in my mind. Or
yeah, right.
It's been a long time since I saw that, so... yeah, basically, for a brief summary... you have this town in New York called Tarrytown, which we mentioned. And Ichabod Crane is the school teacher there. And he's, like, way into ghost stories and stuff. He's always carrying around this book Cotton Mather's wrote about the history of witches and is reading it all the time and talking to people about it. And there's this legend in town about the Headless Horseman who... in this version, doesn't supposedly run around after people and cut their heads off. He just kind of runs around and is generally spooky.
Right. Maybe that's... okay, I'll let you finish the plot summary real quick.
Yeah, so... Ichabod falls in love, or... maybe not falls in love with her, but with the idea of the land holdings he could get if he married her. Katerina von Tassel, this... beautiful young woman in town who's in need of a husband, and the other man vying for her affections is kind of this, like, 1790s jock type, I guess.
Local dude bro.
Yeah. Local dude bro, Bram Bones. And essentially, after this party where everyone's telling ghost stories and Ichabod's trying to convince Katerina to marry him, which she rejects him, he leaves the party and gets chased by the Headless Horseman! And then the next day, no one can find any sign of him, and a lot of people believe that he got spirited away by this ghost. But the author thinks that Bram probably was just fucking with Ichabod, and then Ichabod ran off.
Yeah, got scared and went somewhere else.
Exactly. Which seems probably to be the case.
Yeah.
That instead of a head getting thrown at him, he got a pumpkin thrown at him.
Right.
Because they mentioned finding, like, a broken pumpkin next to his hat. And then when Bram is like, hey, 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 and anytime anybody mentioned Ichabod.
It being way too obvious.
I don't know what happened to me. Yeah, okay.
I was wondering when you mentioned Headless Horseman, and he's supposed to be spooky because he has no head, if maybe the bar for horror has just gone up since then. It's like, ah, there's a ghost with no head. That's creepy. And now we're like, so did it do anything?
Yeah. So he, like, chased you or whatever? Okay.
Well, because that's kind of what I was thinking during the chase, because he's riding. At first, the horseman's just riding even with him. If he speeds up, it speeds up. If he slows down, it slows down. Mm-hmm. I'm like, he just wants to go for a ride, buddy. He's not even doing anything scary yet. That's right. Like, he never did anything threatening, and then when Ichabod panicked and ran in earnest, he really just screwed himself over by being a terrible horseman.
Yeah.
It wasn't until he almost had fallen off the horse of his own accord before the headless horseman got tired of the chase and just just belted him with a pumpkin, which is funny to me. It seems like he wasn't hurt. I have trouble taking it that seriously. I mean, the guy who did it's a little bit of a dick, but
I mean, a pumpkin hitting you would probably hurt pretty bad.
It wouldn't feel real good. It'd definitely unbalance you. It
probably wouldn't kill you, though. Yeah, I'm just thinking of, like, all the representations of the headless horseman. It's like, he's out to ride and steal your head to replace his own. Right. And it's like all these decapitated bodies and stuff. And the original story, it's like, no, he just kind of scares people.
Right.
And then maybe throws a pumpkin at you.
Hey.
Yeah.
I do remember him throwing jack-o'-lantern pumpkins in the Disney version.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't remember if they... It definitely wasn't, like, a harmless prank. They're like scary glowing jack-o'-lantern pumpkins.
Yeah.
That actually getting hit by a jack-o'-lantern would be much better than getting hit by a pumpkin, because it'd be all hollowed out.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. It'd probably just collapse.
The shell just fall off the horse. You're like, ah, dude.
Ben did discover right before recording that the Disney version of the movie exists in whole on YouTube, so
it's a short. It's only 31 minutes.
If anyone ever wants to go watch it. That's right. And it makes sense that it's a short as at 31
That's
minutes.
That's true.
I just think what must have happened is that people took the original story and then, like, often happens, wanted to make the sort of story where it's like, well, it was actually a ghost, you know, where it starts out and someone's like, oh, that's just a legend or a prank, and then it ends up turning into, like, a real ghost thing. Because that's really common in modern-day ghost stories, is to have this skeptic or someone who's, like, proving all these other ghosts phony, and then they run into, like, the real one partway through the movie.
Right.
And then slowly become convinced that it's real, because it is the real example.
Right.
And I think people have the same tendency with The Legend of Sleepy Hollow to want to do that. Like, well, the first time it was a guy with a pumpkin, but then the second time,
yeah,
it was the real Headless Horseman kind of thing.
I think there's a new TV show that's a Sleepy Hollow adaptation. I haven't watched it. I don't know exactly what the premise is, but it seems that it has something to do with just that region
being
kind of infested with spirits and such, mm-hmm. which actually does kind of fit because of all the little ghost legends from that region that get referenced in the story. And so if you took that and just ran with that, it could kind of work.
I think Rhea told me, she's watching it, and she said it's pretty fun. And I think Ichabod Crane is in it. Like, he somehow survived to the present. I don't know what's going on there.
All right.
And then he's, like, helping this just, like, normal lady detective, yeah, like, solve these kind of weird supernatural things. So it's kind of like a police procedural, but
all right.
With a supernatural bent.
This is a little bit like Haven.
I don't know, sounds good. Could be pretty interesting.
Haven was fun.
I haven't seen it.
All right. It's kind of the same thing. It's a police procedural with weird supernatural stuff happening in Haven, which is also in New England. Yeah. It's
New England is very ghosty.
I would say that show is loosely based on a Stephen King, probably novelette called The Colorado Kid. And by based on, I mean one or two of the characters have the same name. That is literally the only thing it has in common.
Kind of like the Will Smith movie I Am Legend is based on the novella I Am Legend.
In name only.
In name only. Yeah. Anyway. Anywho. So, really, because it is a short story, there are not very many characters of note. The biggest character of note is definitely Ichabod Crane, followed up by this Brahm guy.
Yeah.
Character. And then Katarina Van Tassel, mostly just because both of those dudes want to marry her, but she never actually appears, like, quote-unquote on screen or has a speaking line.
So. Right.
She's kind of a character in the vaguest sense of the word.
Here, I'll give you Katarina's entire character. She is pretty and coquettish.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way she's described.
Oh, and she's the sole heir of her father's lands, which...
Which seems significant.
Probably the reason the dudes want to marry her.
Right.
I think this was one of the things that made me think the narration was kind of tongue-in-cheek, is when Ichabod first shows up at her father's holdings, and he's looking around, and he's looking at the chickens, and thinking about the chickens he could eat, and the geese, the corn, and the fruits, and he's, like, imagining all these fantastic feasts by looking, like, at all the animals and fruits and stuff around him, and then after he does that for however many minutes, he goes... I'm going to marry Katarina. Yeah. Like, you just want to marry her so you can eat. Like, it has nothing to do with him really being interested in her.
But his poor scrawny teacher.
Yeah, he does not make enough money to even live in his own home and have food.
Right.
He just goes and stays at the parents of his students' houses one week at a time.
Which for small... New England towns probably isn't that out of the question, actually.
I was going to say, it kind of sounds like something an itinerant preacher would do.
Yeah.
Like, around the same time period. Like, go stay at the houses of the people you preach mm-hmm. to, and they would feed you for, like, a week. And
right. Well, I remember from the week of the History of American Music class I was in before I had to drop it, that psalmodists, people who taught psalmody, actually did that, too. They... Most of them would travel into a town for a few months, board up at someone's place, get paid in food and board as much as in money, and then head to the next town. And
Ichabod kind of does that as well.
Yeah.
In addition to teaching.
And like Ichabod, they, I think, frequently had a reputation for... being interested in the young ladies of the town.
Yeah.
And the young ladies having an interest in them. We actually read an excerpt from a short story in that class that was a kind of a similar setup to this, but it was focused more on the singing lessons, of course, for that mm-hmm. class. But, who knows?
Yes, Ichabod is interested in food and the ladies.
And the ladies.
And they think he's all cool and smart, so... They follow him around. Even though he's apparently, like, super ugly.
Hey, now a new guy comes into town, has all this book learning, has a good singing voice.
Supposedly.
Supposedly.
I'm not sure he has a good singing voice. The narrator kind of made it sound like maybe he didn't. He's teaching everyone how to sing, and he's super proud of his voice, and they're like, yes, at church, indeed, Ichabod Crane's voice was louder than everyone else's.
Well, okay.
His nasally tones can still be said to haunt the churchyard. I was like, are you making fun of him? Or, like, could he actually sing? Like, I couldn't really tell.
He's memorized some of the psalmody melodies in here.
Yeah, I mean, well enough to teach people, I guess.
Close enough.
And that was the thing that kind of surprised me is... how ridiculous Ichabod's character was, because, you know, he's apparently a fairly good school teacher, but he won't beat the kids who can't handle it, so he'll beat the kids who can't handle it more.
Right.
So, like, make up for it, and I was like, well, that's kind of silly, and it's, like, hitting on all these young women interested in food, and he's obsessed with these ghost stories to the point of, like, you know, causing paranoia every time he has to walk home, basically.
Right.
And, I was like, this guy just sounds a little ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say we're not supposed to take him seriously. Or maybe not even the whole story seriously.
I mean, maybe he is ridiculous because that's the point, is that he wasn't actually being tormented.
Right.
He's just a dude with an overactive imagination who reads too much about ghosts.
Yeah, that's... I think it's more or less what I came away with from the story as a whole. So, I guess our only other character is Abraham Van Brunt / Brom Bones.
Yeah, which is a pretty metal name for a 1790s guy.
Yeah, actually it is. Local dude bro and alpha jock.
Yeah, essentially, he's like... I'm the best horse rider in the world. I saw the headless horseman and I outrode him. And these like little posse dudes following him around.
Right.
And he's just pretty full of himself.
I'm pretty sure he's one of those dudes I would have hated in high school.
Yeah. Likes to F with people.
Exactly.
He's like, oh, Ichabod wants Katarina too. Like, I better go F with him. Kind of thing.
Maybe it's setting up. Maybe this is setting up to be another one of our ridiculous classics altered into a high school comedy.
Yeah, or a college comedy. Ichabod, the nerdy band geek. Or choir geek, I guess, because he sings.
That's right.
And Brom Bones, the quarterback, lead quarterback of the football team.
All right, Gabs, we're going to write the Sleepy Hollow High School script when we're done here tonight. Someone will buy it.
Kattery Van Tassel, the hottest cheerleader at the school.
The one thing that those high school and college comedies usually get wrong is that the hot girl is usually not desired by the nerds and the jocks at the same time.
Yeah.
Unless the head cheerleader is also... like, smart or into anime or something.
Right. Like, the nerds might be like, oh, she's hot, but she's, like, a total bitch. Like, in their brains.
Or at least realistically unattainable.
Yeah, exactly. She would never talk to me.
Let's give nerds more credit. They may not have social skills, but they kind of understand those situations, I think.
They have social skills.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're going to follow the standard stereotype.
Yeah.
I'm within the paint that I am using with this brush.
Although Ichabod would be a different type of nerd. Because he's kind of unaware and clueless.
Yeah, he is. Well, that's why he'd be a good character for one of these comedies.
Maybe he'd be like the head of the, like... goth club at the school or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
So into witches and stuff. It's like, I'm a Wiccan. Yeah. Okay, Ichabod.
Whatever you say, Icky.
Stinky Icky.
Oh, it's Icky Crane. He's so gross. God. It writes itself, Gabs.
It sadly does.
Shall we move into our issues?
Yeah, let's do that. We don't have very many. The story's not very long. And unlike, I keep wanting to excuse this by saying, well, it's a short story. But then I was thinking of when we read The Yellow Wallpaper and were able to talk about feminism for an extended length of time.
Right.
This one's not quite the same because it's more of a genre story. So we had feminism just in the main point that Katarina Van Tassel is the only woman of note, and she doesn't get any speaking lines. And then other than her, you kind of have, like, the gossipy farm wives, basically. And in a story where you don't really have, like, in-depth characterization or that many characters to begin with, it's not terribly offensive or anything.
Right.
But it is like, well, you could at least let her, you know, talk once.
Well, that would be the... big difference if we were actually going to write a goofy high school comedy based on The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, is we would flesh that character out big time.
Yeah.
Make her all sassy and fun. It's like, yeah. No, let's actually make the people watch this know why they might be interested in her.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I mean, it's a short enough story that if you just hadn't mentioned her at all, it probably wouldn't be bothersome. You just go, there are no women in this story. Oh, wait, it's really short.
Yeah.
But by mentioning that there's a woman they're trying to woo, it does seem like it'd be polite to at least let us see her personality for a minute or two.
Mm-hmm. Especially because we get to see both of the guys.
Yeah, exactly. Even if we... even with Brom, he's still mostly description.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a whole lot of show. Or so there's not a whole lot of show. Repartee. Yeah, exactly. And even with Ichabod, it's mostly just... it's mostly just description. There's...
yeah.
Is there, like, three lines of dialogue in the whole thing?
Very little. Yeah.
And then on, you know, I guess as long as we're going down the issues road, there's kind of racism in the casual early 19th century way where it's racist because it's 2013. It's mostly that the presumably black servant.
Yeah.
We're thinking probably not a slave in New England.
New York. Yeah, probably not a slave at that. Well, I guess it'd be 1790s. So might actually be a slave.
I suppose. Especially in the country.
Yeah.
But just that the brief appearance by the black character was kind of vaguely cartoonish.
Yeah, he swept up full of self-importance and tried to speak in the proper way that Negroes often do in these situations.
Yeah.
And I was just like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It was almost kind of, the same tone as, like a five-year-old kid trying to imitate his father, the country squire or something.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the, oh, isn't that cute?
They think they're people.
Someday you'll grow up.
Yeah. And then you just go cringe.
Right.
It's only for like two paragraphs and then it moves on.
Right.
But to modern sensibilities, those two paragraphs make you go, ooh, yikes.
Yeah, those little moments, like again, I said, you notice because it's 2013. As far as something that I would use as an example of being notable for racism, this story certainly does not fit that category.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's like, well, if a black character shows up in something written during that time period, I basically expect them to be treated that way, just because that seems to be the norm. And there certainly weren't many black authors back then.
Yeah.
If there were any in the in America.
Some, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Yeah. And if they were, they would probably be more likely to be writing...
narratives and stuff.
Yeah, a memoir or something more politicized than a goofy ghost story.
But most of the, like, black enslaved narratives I can think of don't crop up until closer to the Civil War.
Right.
Like Frederick Douglass and, they just made a movie out of...
oh, The 12 Years a Slave?
Solomon Northup.
Okay.
Who was a free man who, yeah, got captured and was a slave for 12 years and then wrote a memoir about it. It was apparently like a huge... the only book more popular than that book right before the Civil War was Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Hmm.
So...
okay, then.
A black man and a woman at the top of the bestseller list in the 1850s.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that, America? Does that make us less racist? I don't know.
A cause for self-examination, perhaps, at the very least. Let's see.
Yeah, so I guess moving along to themes.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly...
yeah, you know, I think the closest that we've gotten is, it's definitely saying something is silly.
Yeah.
And it might he's just be saying,
fun.
Yeah, it could just be he's poking fun at a bunch of things. Or maybe poking fun at something that would be more specific if we were living closer to that time period and had experienced it.
Uh-huh.
But definitely poking fun a little bit at the itinerant... like school teacher, poking fun a little bit at people who are too into ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
Poking fun a little bit at people who woo heiresses, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Country folks in general.
Yeah.
Could be a city thing. Like, oh, we're here in New York City, and we're so sophisticated compared to the people in the upcountry.
In Tarrytown. Yes. Mm. They still believe in ghosts.
Not like us.
Snarf, snarf, snarf. I mean, the fact that Ichabod himself is definitely supposed to be at least kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that he's so obsessed with this Book of Witches by Cotton Mather's, it makes me think that there has to be some kind of little author snark about being too obsessed with these sort of supernatural stories.
Yeah, that's, as near as I can figure, that must be the point.
And I mean, he does end with the old wives know it best, and they say that he was spirited away by a ghost, but I don't think that he actually believes that.
No, I don't think so either. Especially since I was right on the heels of men acknowledging it probably wasn't true.
Yeah.
And so, I guess as far as the quality of the writing goes, mm-hmm. It's very representative of its time period.
Yeah, we actually managed to do a tiny bit of research. We thought it sounded pretty similar to Nathaniel Hawthorne's writing, so hopped online. Turns out that Washington Irving and Nathaniel Hawthorne lived very large overlap.
Yeah.
Hawthorne's a little younger, but by like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and he only lived 5 years longer, at any rate.
Uh-huh.
So, not surprising. We talked about it in our Scarlet Letter podcast about how that kind of early 19th century romantic literature likes to do the florid description and frequently in a found manuscript.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where once you get started reading it, it's not too bad, but to start reading it is kind of difficult, I think, for a modern reader.
Yeah.
Because you can't just, like, skim through it. You have to sit there and wrap your head around all the sentence construction, right, which is just a little different than it is today.
Yeah, to concentrate just a little bit more. I was having a little bit of trouble reading it on screen, even, because the paragraphs get so long sometimes.
Oh, uh-huh.
I had to start highlighting a couple lines of text at a time.
So you knew where you were.
Because my eyes kept trying to bounce up or down 2 or 3 lines uh-huh. at a time. Which is, you know, just because I'm not used to seeing text that densely packed.
Yeah.
Especially in a novel where, or I guess a short story, a work of fiction, where usually there's some dialogue breaking it up too. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, like you don't see, anytime we've read a classic, there are definitely entire pages without a paragraph break sometimes.
Yeah, and frequently several pages in a row with no dialogue whatsoever, which is much different from the more modern style of writing.
Yes.
And it takes longer to read no dialogue. I think we discussed that when we read Love in the Time of Cholera.
Ah, yeah.
And how that book actually had a lot less dialogue than we're used to seeing in modern writing.
Right.
And it took longer to read because reading big blocks of description without those nice dialogue breaks to take up line space without filling the entire line kind of slows you down.
Yeah. I will say within this style of writing that it doesn't seem to particularly stand out from other things I've read. I mean, he's not better at description. He's not better at making it interesting than some of them.
And even though I was surprised it was a short story when I found that out, I'm glad it was, because there's definitely not enough plot to fill a novella, even.
Yeah.
So I will give Washington Irving props for doing that much.
I guess my final verdict on this book is, I keep saying book, it's a damn short story.
Wait, did you want to talk about Psalmodies?
I kind of did.
Okay.
Yeah, enough so anyway.
Okay.
I don't need to get another layer of detail in there. I was vaguely intrigued by that word popping up a couple times just because
he's a nerd.
I'm a nerd. That's the important part. That's what I was really trying to tell them anyway. That's what I talked about before we recorded. I don't have an opinion on it. It was just kind of eh.
Yeah, I agree. And I was saying earlier, I want to excuse it by saying, well, it was a short story, so I don't really have time to get attached, but it wasn't long enough that it pissed me off. But then again, going back to The Yellow Wallpaper, for example, I really liked that short story and the script by it, and thought it was really interesting.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't really just say, well, it was a short story, so it didn't really grip me. Like, that's not fair, because there are good short stories out there.
Well, yeah, some of these iconic short stories, like, you get it, you read it, and you, like, it keeps recycling itself in your brain for the next week.
So, yeah, we're just gonna go with, we really don't know why this is such a classic that has captured people's imaginations for hundreds of years.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't tell someone not to read it, just, it's so damn short.
Yeah.
But if you haven't read it, you don't really need to. Like, you can just ask me what happens, and I can tell you in 3 sentences.
Yeah, exactly. If you listen to this podcast, you're basically good to go.
Yeah, we've probably used more words talking about it than are in it at this point. Anyway. Or at least pretty close.
Yeah.
And so, you know, really the question I was left with at the end of it was, why is this so iconic?
I was thinking it might have something to do with the fact that it's in the same short story collection as Rip Van Winkle, which is another classic, and maybe just a combination of short stories that people liked, a couple of them were bound to stick around. And, you know, if something enters the lexicon or whatever at some point, then you can't really make it go away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it has something to do with the author's renown and popularity during his lifetime. Because I can't see a great reason for it otherwise. I mean, something like Rip Van Winkle, you could argue, is maybe one of the first stories that's attempting to tell a time travel story.
Yeah. Sleepy Hollow is actually listed as speculative fiction on Wikipedia, and
really?
I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, I'd have to go with a no on that one.
But I guess if you're dealing with something that's not just straight reality, you can claim it's speculative fiction.
Yeah.
But I would say, again, if you're wanting to read something for Halloween, I would recommend you to last year's Halloween podcast and read Frankenstein, which is much longer, and you do have to deal with some silly things, but good story.
Yeah, it is a good book. what are you reading right now?
I just started The Sky Is Everywhere by Jandy Nelson. It's a YA book about a teenage girl whose older sister died and her dealing with it.
Ah, from the YA death genre.
Exactly. I actually just
That is
finished.
Totally a subgenre.
Do you remember last week I said I just started A Ring of Endless Light, which
yes.
I finished a couple days ago. One in Newbery, like 4 people die in it.
Of course.
I was like, we really need to do our Newbery death
book. Yeah. It's coming, everybody. We just don't know when. I'm reading In Enemy Hands by David Weber, so if you're a regular listener, you know what that's all about.
More of that Honor Harrington shoot. No, yeah. I actually encourage anyone who likes military sci-fi to go read those books, because it's a sci-fi series starring a woman, which sounds badass, but I don't like military sci-fi, so I want other people to go support that book. Those
yeah,
books.
If we do this long enough, maybe I'll make Gabs read the first one sometime. Just so we can actually have an example of military science fiction written by a man where you have a strong female character.
Yeah.
Just so we can talk about that once. That would be my sell on making you do it. But Yeah, this one is starting slow. After 130 pages so far, their honor has thrown a fancy party. That is my plot synopsis for the first 130 pages. Anyway, if you would like to comment, or if you have a question, or perhaps you want to suggest better Halloween reading, can do so on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can shoot us an email, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com. Excuse me.
We are also on Twitter at novelideaspod.
And you can find us on iTunes.
And if you do that, rate, review, comment, all that good stuff.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So we kind of have a schedule blip occurring.
Yeah, I have to be out of town for work reasons, which sounds weird to say because it almost sounds like a grown-up thing to say. So next week there is not going to be an episode. However, in 2 weeks, the week of November 11th, we're going to try to put out two episodes. And so the first of those will be Ender's Game.
By Orson Scott
Card. By Orson Scott Card.
Followed up by, I believe, The Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
And obviously there is an Ender's Game movie being released soon if you have turned on a TV or Hulu or anything in the last, like, year.
Yeah. It's everywhere.
It's being marketed a little bit. And Ender's Game is actually my favorite book of all time, so I'm kind of looking forward to it.
We will...
The book discussion, the movie, I'm not letting my hopes get up.
Oh, I refuse to go see it until I hear one way or the other, actually. Because Ben and I have both read it before, I haven't read it in probably 5 years, though. I'm going to go ahead and say, if you're interested in seeing the movie, read the book before or after. Don't buy your own copy. Get it from a library or borrow it from someone so you don't give any money to Orson Scott Card. But read the book because it's really good. And you won't be disappointed if you like that sort of thing. That's what I'm going to go ahead and say.
Yeah, and that would be a good one to read before you listen to the podcast episode.
Yeah.
Because there is
massive a... massive spoiler alert.
Holy crap spoiler. Yeah. It's actually one of the very few stories I've read where I think I would have been pissed if I got spoiled on it.
Yeah.
And spoilers don't bother me 99.9% of the time.
Yeah.
So, fair warning, and we'll be sure to warn about that once or twice before then, before we start talking about it in earnest, too, so... I believe that will do it for this week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.